Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life and things like that. Isn't it nice that we care about each other? Isn't it nice? Isn't it nice that one of the most beautiful things about the positive mind is that it reflects which it does. General, generous, genuine caring. The real stuff. Now, here's a question. Why do some people care and why do other people not care? There's a real question for you. How could, you know, some people look at something and feel hardened by it? You know, say you work for the CIA and you see somebody laying dead, or you watch any of these medical programs where they're examining dead bodies. You know, and then, oh yeah, he died, it was just, well, the skin was burned off, blah, 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 and then they go into disgusting little details. How is it that some people care and other people don't care? How could you be doing that for a living and not care? What does it mean? Does it mean you're cold-hearted and you're miserable and that's it? You're just so cold, nobody is, you're not worth loving? Is that what it means? Are you an ice queen because you don't have feelings for other people? You go down the street and you see a homeless person, they're in trouble, and there are some you see who are in real trouble. Others you see have adapted very well, and they're living their life outside, but then there are some who are in real trouble. Do you care? Do you not care? What do you do? What do you do? Why do we care? Well, let's look at the animal world. Does the animal world care? Do the monkeys care? You know what I mean? Does a monkey think about how's the other guy feeling? Well, here's an interesting thing that we discovered. We discovered that when giving monkeys a chance to press a button and receive pleasure in the form of getting food pellets, that they would do that. Of course, you'd do it all the time if you're a monkey, or pleasure or a stimulus, you know, like endorphins or sexual stuff. You know, you could press a button, you always get that. That's pretty good. It's pretty addictive. If you're a monkey, what else are you going to do? You know, hang around a tree or something? No, press the pleasure button. So you press the pleasure button, but they found that when the monkey observed another monkey in pain, they stopped pressing the pleasure button. Now, what would make a person stop giving themselves rewards, or a monkey, because another monkey is feeling something? So they decided that they were going to study this a little bit. And they got this funny thing about cracking your peanuts. The sound of a peanut cracking automatically brings the attention of another monkey. How does it work? Somebody eating suddenly gets another monkey to salivate. How does that happen? How does this happen? What's going on here? And how does this relate to humans and their ability to express and feel empathy? Empathy, don't you wish you had people in your life who had more empathy for you? Empathy. What is it that we want to know? Why do people go to psychotherapy in the first place? They go to psychotherapy in the first place because they should be called psychotemporists, you know? Like as if, you know, we have empathy is what we do for a living. It is what we do for a living. But what does empathy mean? We just mean we listen to your sad story and we go, ooh, how bad that is? Or is empathy being able to really walk in your shoes? Or at least not in your shoes, at least close enough to being in your shoes that we get what you feel like. Do you ever turn to your husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, teacher, mother, father, and say, I wish you knew what I felt on the inside. I wish you knew this feeling. You beg them to know you. And it's so rarely that you get known by anyone. So rarely. So that's why people go to psychotherapy. They go to psychotherapy because someone there is going to pay attention to them and know them. But now there are psychotherapists, I know quite a few, who are cold-hearted stiffs. And what they do is they look at you, they observe you, and then they medicate you. Or they look at you, they observe you, and they tell you what to do. Or they look at you and they observe you. And they do all the things, you know, the problem solvers, like coaches. You know, that's what a coach does. A coach looks at you and tells you what to do next. Then there's a therapist who actually listens and goes in and feels it and says, what does this feel like? Give me the details. Bring it as close to me as possible. Now, what's fascinating, I'm not saying that therapists are good, because I think it's a waste of money mostly. However, when it's good, it's really great. But when you have a therapist who's listening, it's like having a great friend who listens. But then we have friends who don't listen. You know, some people choose friends who don't listen, who are not empathetic. Right? They just want to hear about themselves. Many people just want to talk about themselves. I was thinking about Andrew Carnegie, was it? The Carnegie Rules for How to Succeed in Business. How to Succeed in Business, Andrew Carnegie said, you basically have one basic understanding. Get this under your craw and you will succeed in business. Nobody cares. He said, once you get this idea, nobody cares about you. And everybody wants you to care about them. So now this is the basic of how to succeed in business. Or Dale Carnegie? Maybe. Andrew Carnegie, I think, was the railroad. Anyway, so he wrote this fabulous book, and a lot of people I know live by this. And what that is if you talk about yourself, I will listen to you firmly. I will empathize. I will get you strongly. And that person, the person who listens the best, you know, they call them a good listener, succeeds. Whereas the person who only talks about themselves, they don't succeed. So you go with somebody who you're trying to get a contract from, or a boss, or somebody you're trying to impress, and they say something about themselves, and you switch the conversation to yourself. Blah. You know, nothing. It's known as a non-empathetic response. And according to Andrew Carnegie or Dale Carnegie or the brothers, you don't succeed that way. The way you succeed is to listen and empathize. So now we're discovering something new. Is this a skill? Is this a matter of the heart? Is this a matter of caring? Is this a matter of a broken child? What is the matter? What makes you care? And why do you care? And should you care? Well, okay. They took the research a little further, and they wanted to study first the animals, and they were studying lions and tigers and bears and everything else. And, you know, they were looking at, you know, elephants. You know, funny thing happens with elephants. When an elephant passes a graveyard of another, you know, the bones of another elephant, it dwells there for a long time. And they say, there's a question, do elephants weep? They say that the elephant goes through an experience of grief when it sees the bones of another elephant. Meanwhile, if a dog is passing by and it sees a dead dog, and it wonders if there's any meat on the bones to eat, it doesn't have that kind of empathy. It doesn't think of it that way. They also found that among many animals, if the animal was close to you in some way, you had empathy. Like if it was in the same cage or in the same, you know, lived on the same block, right? You had empathy for it, but if it was a foreigner and somebody you weren't connected to, you didn't have the empathy. All right, let's go a little further. Let's study this empathy just a tiny bit more. They found that males have a mechanism that helped them shut off empathy when they're on the hunt. Now, this is very important. And what we're going to get to is that there are cells in the brain called mirror neurons, which are kind of working with this whole thing. I'll explain that to you in a couple of minutes. This is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind, giving you some fascinating stuff about who cares and who doesn't care, and should you care, and why do we care, and do you care too much? You know, it's really kind of interesting. But here's the thing about males. A male hunter, when an animal is hunting, and it's hunting some kind of a gazelle. Now, if you're a lion and you're going after a gazelle and the gazelle gets hurt, what good is it going to do you to have empathy for that gazelle? Right? You want to shut off your empathy. If your lion cub got hurt, you would have a whole response. If your fellow lion got hurt, you'd have a whole response. So there is a mechanism where you could shut off the empathy in order to hunt. This is very significant. A male gets on a hunt. Now, this means with the raise in testosterone, specifically, testosterone helps you shut off that response. Increased testosterone. Now, what is that? Does that have any meaning? Sure. A man wants to get laid. He's on a hunt. He goes into a bar. He meets somebody. He loses all empathy. He doesn't, you know, the thing is taken over. How many times do we know about that? How many times do we know about people who are hunting? You're looking for a job. How about you're a salesman who's doing cold calls and you're trying to sell people nothing for money? And you're on the hunt and you're doing it and you're going there. You lose all empathy for the people you're calling. And there are people who do cold calls. You know, those people who call you up, the solicitors. They shut it off. Had they do it, the hunt works for them. It's the hunt mechanism. Well, okay, let's go back a little further. Empathetic feelings can vary depending on the context also. In one study, they compared women to men with feelings of revenge. It's a funny thing. Men have many more feelings of revenge than women do, because something touches them deeper, that they could feel the pain of the other, especially when it's pain related to somebody else. Somebody hurt somebody connected to you, right? The revenge stays around a lot longer in males than it does in females. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So let's talk about mirror neurons and what they are. Mirror neurons are an important part of this because it's going to lead us to a special dance of understanding with each other and with you too. We're going to take your calls later today too. So a mirror neuron is a premotor neuron which fires both when an animal or a human acts and when the animal observes the same action performed by another. So in other words, when your mirror neuron is a response to seeing somebody do something. Somebody cries, you weep. Somebody's happy, you feel happy. How does that happen? How does it work? Well, we found out it's a very sophisticated group of neurons that we have working here. These are, you know, neurons are generally workhorses. These are very sophisticated devices that we've developed. The mirror neurons have, which were discovered by Giacomo Rizzolatti. I like it. It was started by an Italian way back in the late 1800s and, no, 1880s and 1990s. And so he was studying these mirror neurons and studying the mirror neurons in monkeys and so on and so forth. And what we found is that there are two parts of the brain, the anterior cingulate gyrus, and another part of the brain, both which are working together, and they're working together to kind of have these mirror neurons working for you, and it's a good thing you've got them working, but some people don't have it. Imagining someone else's situation is not empathy. You get that? Such an imagination could be a cold affair, not like understanding how airplanes fly. You can understand how airplanes fly, but that doesn't touch you. Empathy requires, get this, the emotional involvement. You have to have an emotional reaction to somebody's feeling. So joy is an emotional reaction, don't you think? Joy is an emotional reaction. Sadness is an emotional reaction. Anger is an emotional reaction. They had these kids watching television, and they watched TV. They watched TV, and they were watching violent programs, and they studied. You know, the kids became more violent, sure. They actually felt more violence. It was more likely they're going to turn around and slap their sister if they were watching a violent program, because it kind of engendered this. It goes to that mirror neuron, that part of you that could be violent when necessary. But now, here's my discovery, and it's validated in a recent New York Times article, which, where is that? Call them real minds. In a recent New York Times article called Cells That Read Minds, everyday experiences are being viewed in a new light. Mirror neurons reveal how children learn, why people respond to certain types of sports, dance, music, and art. All right, let's think about that responsiveness. What is this thing called movies? If you show a dog a movie of another dog, does that dog go, ooh, how nice, look at that other dog, I feel happy? No, they don't look at TV and feel anything. If you show a cat a picture of a cat, do they respond to it? No, because it doesn't seem that they have those same mirror neurons. They need another animal to do it, but humans can do it through the media. So we have the ability, through somebody projecting an image of something else that is like what we may experience, to actually have the experience. The other day there was a terrible commercial on TV about rats and, you know, and how you could get infested by rats. I don't know, they just put it on all of a sudden, and I felt the immediate aversion as, you know, these rats crawled on, and I said, ooh, what are they doing to me? And I felt it. I could feel it happen. If I see something really sad, I feel it inside. If I see a lot of anger being expressed, I could feel anger inside too as well. Well, maybe I'm not the best subject for that, because I kind of reinterpret stuff really quickly inside me. But most people, so when most people watch dance, they see freedom and they feel free. And when people hear opera, they feel grand. And when people see jazz, they feel the flexibility of their brains. It's all coming from the mirror neurons. You are part of it. You're a piece of it. That's why we have performing arts. A performing artist is supposed to engender in you that part of you. Find the dancer in you. Go to Alvin Ailey. You know, go to the Metropolitan Opera. Find the singer in you. Got to find these parts of yourself. They're all there. And if you like something, one thing or another, like if you like football and you like aggression, you got to find the aggression inside of yourself. Find it, because it's there. It's located. It's right inside you. Now, get this. The most important thing about this discovery, pornography. Oh, my gosh almighty, pornography. Pornography is very confusing. It is very confusing. Why would somebody watch porn over and over and over again when there are 100,000 women doing 100,000 different things, and men too? What is it that keeps you going back there over and over again? Well, mirror neurons. Because when you watch it, when certain people watch it, they feel the same response. They feel that turn on. They feel that activity. They feel the same sexual thing that is happening to them. Now think about this, and it's going to make you think differently about people who appreciate erotic art and pornography. What they're doing is looking to find this part of themselves. They want to find the erotic part of themselves somehow. They're losing it. They look for it. They don't have it available. And when you become so that you become addicted to it, it's like you just can't find it any other way. So eroticism and erotic art and pornography have become very understandable. I'm getting some kind of a funny noise here. Would you go check? I think that's out. So pornography is one of those things that we now can understand, whereas we didn't understand it before. And because we didn't understand it before, we are now getting a better hang of it. Now, empathy for pain activates pain-sensitive regions of the brain, said the University of California. Knowing our partner is in pain automatically triggers affective pain processing regions of our brains. So if we watch someone we care about a great deal in pain, we very often will feel that actual physical pain ourselves. And we will not feel the actual physical pain, but we'll feel the emotion that is related to the physical pain. So it becomes a very difficult thing. Our telephone number here today is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls today. 212. And I know yesterday a funny thing happened. People were calling in, but we didn't seem to get the calls through the station, I was told. So 212-209-2900. Be sure to make your calls. And, Michael, if you would, let me know when the calls are up because I'm going to take a couple of calls early on today because we have just a short time between now and holidays, and I'd like to make as much contact with you as possible, especially around stuff called mirror neurons and around empathy. Where is your empathy? Where is it, my friends? 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Hey, I've got something going on here in my background.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. Oh, this is a great show because this empathy thing, after you described it, that it's not just an intellectual understanding of somebody's situation. It's actually the emotional feeling of their situation when you make that distinction. Then that totally, because I was like, yeah, I can kind of understand how people feel. But then when you actually mention the emotional aspect of it, that is like completely dead. I have never felt that ever. Maybe when I was like younger, but whew, never really feel it.
You never feel it, right?
No. When people are really angry, that anger doesn't seep into me. When people are really sad, the sadness doesn't seep into me. It's all so... I usually get like a sense of like when people are really angry, because I'm a teacher, I'm a high school teacher.
Yeah.
And when kids are really angry, that anger always makes me almost, it's like I can't help but see them, I can't take them seriously, so I can't really get angry with them. Like they'll yell.
Right, that's for sure. But when do you feel, let's say someone you love, you talk about your absence of it, right? When do you feel it? What about someone you love is hurt?
If someone I love is hurt, if my wife gets hurt, it's mostly just a concern. And
concern
if she's
from
sad,
a distance, right?
If she's sad, then it does, that pretty much eclipses everything in my life if she is in a certain mood.
Why is that? Why would it eclipse everything in your life?
Because she is very important. She is a very large... object, she's like a large contingent of my life. So when she's upset, it takes over my concern, but it never really, like when she's sad, it doesn't really make me sad. When she's angry, it doesn't make me angry. When she's, all these feelings, I can't, like I'm not there with her. And honestly, it's like, I take it as a big relief.
What do you take as a big, that you can't feel it?
Yeah.
Because she has so many down feelings. Now, that happens over time. Have you always been like this?
I'm going to say that I've been like this, let's see, I probably was not always like this, but the times when I was not like this, I really can't relate with myself when I was like this.
Well, there are two concepts related to this. One is that we intend to, you tend to intellectualize things and you tend to be a thinker, a brainiac kind of guy, or are you an emotional guy on your own?
I'm very emotional about things that are important to me, but the list of those are incredibly small, so I usually come across as...
As what? Are you still there? Oh, I lost that call. Okay, so the two concepts I want to establish here, 212-209-2900, please do call back. Hi there, you still there? No, I can't hear him at all.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay.
I lost you for a moment.
Okay, I'm back.
Yeah, so there are two concepts here. One concept is that you have shut off your heart. which I don't believe.
No.
I believe there are mirror neurons and there are mirror neurons, and some people have more than other people. And I think they are very dependent on hormonal systems as well. Mm. I think women have more mirror neurons than men do. I think men have certain types of mirror neurons related to aggression and so on and so forth. But even then, what is a man and what is a woman and how much hormone makes you one or the other? So I think it is kind of hormone dependent and individually specific. So you being the way you are, I'm glad to hear, you know, so look up mirror neurons. You can see.
The problem is that when I don't know if it's a biochemical thing, because I find it really tied into an inability to really take. I was reading a book, and they mentioned that a character in the book who was a psychopathic serial killer, he was talking to his girlfriend, and his girlfriend said, you know, Dexter, guy's name, it's also a show, I always look at you, and you always look like you know the rules of the game, and so you never take it seriously, and everyone else doesn't know the rules, they don't know how the game works, so they are all so scared. But you always act like it's all just a big game. Like, you can't take things seriously because you know I have difficulty really taking pain and suffering seriously because it's all so, like, ethereal. It's also, like, it doesn't make any sense. It's also silly.
Now, are you saying that? Or are you saying that Dexter says that?
No, I relate. It was just that line in that book. That
well, let's take that for two places, okay? The definition of a psychopath is not that they can't feel empathy. The definition of a psychopath is that they don't feel regret or remorse. They feel regret but not remorse. Now, that's a very important thing. So a classic psychopath would be James Bond. Right? James Bond, who everybody admires and loves because he's such a good, skilled killer, they like him because he kind of walks away from everything without a feeling and with a smile. He kind of, you know, I didn't care. I don't care. I don't care.
And that's different than this.
That's one kind
really
of thing. But I look at the world as a game. I look at it as people getting lost in it. But I have tears in my eyes when I watch. I watch this world of people beating up each other and hurting each other and doing things to each other and stringing themselves out with love and what love is and what they do in the name of love. I see this stuff all the time, and I don't believe any of it, but my heart goes out to the
people
who feel.
That's what I don't do. I see this, and I see it as like this big, silly cycle of, and if people could just like step off it, or people could just...
I got an idea for you. What's your name?
Evan,
I need you to volunteer. Put some volunteer service into a place. Go to a place where you volunteer your time. Okay? And I would recommend places where especially places, and this is my best place was that I ever worked with when I worked with paraplegics and people who were quadriplegics. The best thing was because they don't want you to help. They just want you to watch in case the chair rolls or something. So they want you there. Go there and see what that's like for you, because they need you. They need a man who's like you. They want somebody with not too much empathy because the empathy gets in the way. But they want someone who cares. You're a loving man, Evan. I hear it in your voice. You're a beautiful guy. You're built with... You just got mirrors that are
but I think it's
shaped.
A wonderful thing to be. It's a wonderful thing to be where I am because
I think it's a wonderful thing to be, Evan.
You don't get. There's always. I can always help. I can always be. It never really. Yeah, I never get vindictive. I never get mean with people. I can get angry about certain.
You're
people,
a good go-to guy.
Yeah, but because it's like people that things that bother people. It's like that's what you bought. That's what you're crazy about. This is what's driving your entire life into a hole. This silly little thing. This is what it
but
is.
But you see, don't diminish it. It's not a silly little
yeah,
thing.
That's what I, but I
oh, Evan, if you would look at it and say, "Oh, so this is you lost in one of these things that seems so big to you."
Yeah.
A great man I know once said that the way that he always looks at people is whether they see elephants. Mice as elephants. He said when a person sees a mouse and they think it's an elephant, they respond with the fear as if they're being confronted by an elephant, but it's only a mouse. He said eventually what people do is they get to realize that mice are only mice, and they deal with the elephants when the elephants come along. So that was it's kind of that lesson.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I fully celebrate and I feel sympathy, empathy for the people who are so filled with mirror neurons aimed in every direction that every time something happens, they are going to be the conduit and the barometer of what's happening out there. You're going to see it. The tears will rush to their eyes.
Yeah.
The pain will come across their face. And I'll bet your wife is just like that.
To a degree.
Yeah, that's what you did. You bought that for yourself. Evan, I got to go because I have to take a short break.
All right, Armand.
And nice to talk to you. Thank you for calling in. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take a very short break, station identification, then a short, great piece of music for the end of the year because I wanted to play this for you, my friends, because it's now my new favorite, a new version of a very familiar old thing. And I'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. This is Armand DeMille. Here's my little gift for you today. Hold on a second. Here it comes. Yes.
Because the world is round, it turns me on.
This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. You're listening to Because by the Beatles. In the album, the new album, Love, which is from the performance in Las Vegas, which is kind of remarkable. This is kind of remastered and remarkable. And the reason that it's so remarkable, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. Because, you know, do babies have mirror neurons? There's a good question for you. You know, baby neurons. You know, well, you see one baby cry, and boom, watch them all start crying. It just happens. There's a kind of a thing that goes off. One baby cries, another baby cries. One baby's unhappy, the other baby gets unhappy. One baby starts to laugh, the other baby laughs. So if the children have it, if the infants have it, not all, some have it, some don't, but the ones who have it do have it. And when the reason I played this music for you today was it was just kind of a remarkable thing. I had a baby around me one time, and this baby was looking at, I was playing music in the background. When this song came on, the baby froze. I mean, like a six-month-old child, right, froze, and for the first time paid attention to something. And for the 2 minutes and 30 seconds of this recording, the baby just stared at the speakers. What was going on? Did she recognize her? He recognized the Beatles? No. He recognized something about the harmony. Something about it touched something inside of him. And it got his juices flowing, which made him pay attention. So what makes you pay attention to people? Something in you has to get touched. And here's the story. The story is you have to have an affective, let me read this to you now. You have to have a context-dependent affective reaction, which means that because of the context, you have an emotional reaction to a particular situation and not necessarily a sensory aspect of it. See, you don't have to feel the pain of somebody in pain, but you will feel a pain emotional reaction to somebody in pain. This is mirror neurons. This is the way they work. Because we wouldn't want you to have to feel the pain. If you felt the pain, then the two of you would be screaming, you know, when you're in pain. See, if somebody in cancer, you'd both be laying down on the bed. You know, that's no good. We want you to have empathy, but we don't want you to have that much empathy. And imagine the nursing and medical profession. If they have too much empathy, right? Too much, they can't. You know, they can't. They have to kind of shut it off a little bit. In fact, the people who go into that profession have it shut off a little bit. They can't. They can't have it up there all the time, especially the people, I think, who work in hospices. You're working with people who are dying. Now, what kind of, you know, you can have this in your heart, and I think it's beautiful work. And I remember Roberta Maria Atti used to do that work. And you're there, and you could empathize, and you could look. But if you're not afraid of death, then you're only dealing with the person's pain, and you empathize with their pain, and you help them through. Good hospice work. Those are magnificent people. So another question is, what makes things certainly popular? Like, think about Oprah Winfrey. What makes Oprah so popular is what she does and the way that she presents touches something inside of you that makes you have feelings when you watch. There was a scene, in, I think it was in Ocean 13, where two of the actors are suddenly running by, there's like stealing $6 trillion or something, and they run into each other, and they're watching, and they pass an Oprah Winfrey show. And they're both watching Oprah Winfrey, and there are tears coming to their eyes. These two rugged kind of guys. And it's like that kind of thing. It touches people. On the other hand, we need to be touched, because there's a part of almost everybody that feels like they're going dead. When you function for so long, when you isolate yourself, when you don't have your family, you know, when you move yourself away, when love is at a distance, when your husband's working all day long and has no time for you, when, you know, you just have no, when your mate's just too busy for you or turned off or something, you know, you need it. Sometimes you just need it, so you go out to find it however you can. This is Armand DeMille. I think people who are too dependent on feeling from other people fall in love. I think love for many people is, I need to need you, because if I don't need you and I get lost inside of you and I get lost. I'm watching somebody who's got an obsessive compulsive disorder today, earlier today, who was speaking about his love, quote, love. And I guess he feels love because it is love to him. But that kind of love where you love with such pain, when a person is, you know, they won't respond to you or they treat you badly and you have all this emotional pain and you get lost in the pain of it, that is mirror neurons going off. You're in pain, you're hoping they feel pain, they feel pain, they reject you. You're going through this tremendous emotional thing, like our friend was saying earlier, over very little, you know. It's just two people not getting together at the moment. But sometimes people want the pain of love because they need to feel. Because the mirror neurons aren't picking up anything anywhere around. You know, they're like little scanners. Somebody make me feel. Somebody make me feel. Horror movies. Very interesting. Why do people go to horror movies? Why? Because they want to feel. What makes a horror movie make you feel? Well, if you go into a horror movie and you see somebody about to get strangulated. I like the word. You know. You gasp, or if a knife is coming out of when you're in the shower, oh my gosh almighty, you get these feelings and you trigger these mirror neurons inside of you, and now suddenly you got all your juices running through your body, and by the time you leave the theater, you're filled with endorphins and relief and all other kinds of stuff. I wonder if people fall in love when they meet in horror movies. You know, I met him in a horror movie, and we were both so terrified that by the time we left, we were in love. Must be like taking a drug. 212-209-2900 is our number here. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand's Mill.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello. I'm so very happy to be speaking with you. My name is Barbara Teresa.
Hello, Barbara Teresa. What a name.
And I'm sort of the opposite of your other caller. After 9/11, I lived on East 20th Street, and all of those posters that were pasted all around in all the hospitals and every bus shelter of people celebrating, smiles on their faces, mostly under 40, and all not coming back. And I never didn't cry, and I wish I could limit it more than I can. I don't watch the news, and I don't.
I was going to ask you: do you tend to be an isolationist? Do you tend to live alone?
I am living alone. Well, I have a wonderful, wonderful pet that's very exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't live with another person.
And do you tend to choose clothing? Just stick with me, Barbara Teresa.
Yes, dear.
Do you tend to pick clothing that are unique, not like other people's clothing?
I try.
You try to get some unique. Do you try to, like, put things together that are a little different?
Yes, I would say
that. And being different is kind of important to you, isn't it?
Maybe so.
Not being an ordinary person?
Maybe so.
Well, the reason I mention it is because you're describing the empath of a romantic. You know, you're describing what it's like to be a person who picks up and lives on the radar sendings of pain.
Hmm.
You are a bigger receptor for pain than you are for pleasure. And because of this, you can feel, you know, if you are aware of pain, if you see pain, when you, everything kind of goes into your pain neurons.
Mm-hmm.
And something in that makes you, is the way you live. Now, this is not a bad thing, but it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You would not as kindly respond to joy or happiness or seeing people celebrate. You know, in fact, I am sure that you're going to avoid New Year's Eve.
Hmm.
What are you doing on New Year's Eve?
I don't really have any plans for New Year's Eve. I think it's just, I really do think New Year's Eve is just too much going on.
Right, because you're private. You don't want to be part of this world where too much is going on, and you got all those silly people out there drunk and blowing horns.
Yeah.
You know what I recommend to people on New Year's Eve? I like this a lot, by the way. The Roadrunners Club, I think they're doing it this year, has fireworks in Central Park, and they have a gathering around it, which is just around 9 o'clock at night, which has always been remarkable and peaceful and kind and nice.
Joan Hamburg has said that, too. And,
yeah,
and
who has?
Yes.
Yeah, and yes. Yeah, and they recommend it also. But that's not for you, because this is not what
No, it's not for me. I hate the cold.
I know, and you hate being out there with strange people.
No, not really. Well, I do have a church that I go to, and I have people who are, I would say, compatible and... Nobody makes my skin crawl.
I hear you. And do you dance?
I can, yes.
And when's the last time you danced?
Oh, I danced at the where I go for lunch, and they had very nice music, and I danced there.
Do you dance with people, or do you dance alone?
Yeah, no, I dance with people.
Great. Mm-hmm. Then that's going to be the place you do it.
Uh-huh.
Dance will be the place that will actually get you to correct those mirror neurons
that's
of
wonderful.
Yours that are fixated on pain. Use dance as best you can.
Okay.
Go wherever there is public dancing or places where people dance, and you get yourself involved in it, because, Barbara Teresa, you're a lovely person, and you've got so much good kindness to put out there.
Yes.
You know, not only on the receiving end, but not just to pain. You don't only have to be associated to pain, as your cat will tell you. Do you have a cat?
No.
What do you have?
I have, it sounds funny, but I have a turtle.
No, that doesn't sound funny.
He's very different than anybody would expect. I should write stories about him because we all know that he's very lucky for me, and he will make me rich if I do write those stories.
Is he a big animal?
No, he fits very nicely in my hands. I always say God gave him to me.
So he's funny. He lives kind of the way you do.
Well, I guess
in a nice shell, and yet he comes out of that shell to give the kind of love to you, you know?
Well, he's not one who goes into his shell because...
No need to, because he's safe around you.
Yeah, right.
I got you.
Yeah.
So you don't have to go in your shell as long as you're safe.
I guess that's true. And it has, I guess it has to do also, don't you think, with family and a psychology of lack and denial.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. And your turtle's family. You never know what his mother was like.
That's absolutely
And how
so.
She treated him and what
I never thought of that.
What he went through. But you see, he finds a loving hand, and he just comes out and he never has to go in his shell.
I think he's
given you a lesson. What's your turtle's name,
his
I want
name
to know?
His name is Batik. Batik. You know the material, Batik?
Batik, yes. Mm-hmm. And is Batik listening right now?
Oh, he is. No, he's having a nice little swim for himself in the kitchen.
Batik, wherever you are, thanks for loving Barbara Teresa.
Absolutely. I thank God every day for him and
thanks
his
for
wonderful
calling
ways.
Barbara Teresa. Thank you.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, dear.
Yeah, this is Armand DeMille. Don't you love people? Don't you? You know what I do for a living? I mean, think about how wonderful this is that I'm on the other side of this. Fantastic. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
Yes.
Am I on the air? I'm
you
on the air.
You are now.
Finally. Thank you, Armand. You're my mentor, believe me. God bless you. I love your show.
Thank you so much. What's your name?
You talked about me. My name is Kelly.
Kelly,
hi. You talked about mirror neurons. Now, I guess from what you described it, sets off emotions. Well, my emotions were set off from that today. I guess it went as high as anger. I'm in like a little dilemma. I have a daughter that finds herself in and out of jail. And one of my other daughters called me this morning and told me she was locked up. Now, those mirror neurons went off because the anger went up and I was like, no, no, no. I don't want to hear it. Now, later on, you said it also can fall down within empathy. I felt that's my child. I should love her, it's a thing about, I see it over and over through the years when someone's locked up. It seems like the family or the loved ones are supposed to support these people when they're locked up. I don't know if I'm wrong for not.
Oh, Kelly, you have such mixed feelings, and I understand. Let's get away from mirror neurons for a minute. My heart cracks for you. I mean, you want to see a mirror neuron going on now. The pain and conflict that you're going through, including you having a conflict with the rage and anger that you feel that you think you shouldn't feel towards your daughter, and the defensiveness you feel and the anger you feel towards other people who are telling you to be understanding and compassionate with her. And you're caught in the middle there, Kelly. You're trying so hard to say, no, look, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I feel. You have a right to be angry. You have a right to be dispassionate. And if you give yourself that right, you will find that you will develop and you will actually get to your empathy. But you have to have the right to be it. You may not have to express it. You don't have to tell people how angry you are. But give yourself the right to it. You are angry your daughter's in jail again, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. What's she in jail for?
The silliest thing, shoplifting.
Not silly. Uh-uh. Well, shoplifting is not silly. Shoplifting is a very, very serious act. It means a person believes that whatever they want to get in life, they can't get any other way except by taking it when they shouldn't. And that's a real deprived state of mind.
Well, she. I think what really set me off even more, she has a child. She has a little six-year-old child.
Yeah, I understand.
There's no husband. There's no father. A six-year-old child.
So I would like people to think of what it's like to be Kelly. To be Kelly, not to be your daughter, but to be Kelly caught as a father of a child who repeatedly gets in trouble and who's got a daughter, and Kelly is frustrated and lost, and he loves his daughter, but he also is so angry at her, and he wants to tell her what to do. Just behave yourself, and you'll do right and take care of your daughter. That's what Kelly feels. So you don't know it, Kelly, but my compassion, my mirror neurons are going off on the confusion that you feel. The confusion with your many emotions, and it's fully understandable. There is no answer.
There is no answer.
And letting your daughter live her own life, it's tough stuff. It's tough stuff, you know? So I thank you for calling in, and I wish I could be of help to you. If she ever gets out and you want to bring her around to me or call me up or let me know, I'll try to find her some kind of help. She certainly needs it.
You don't have it. I shouldn't bail her out, you say.
Oh, I don't know.
Or should I? It's not a shouldn't or should.
No, that's not an issue. Just don't do it with mixed feelings. Have the real feelings, which is I'm angry and I'm bailing you out. Be real. You know, and you don't have to be real to her. Be real to yourself. I don't know what's the right thing to do, you know?
I don't either.
The confusion. Here it is. Mm-hmm.
And I also feel kind of hypocritical if I bail out. I was talking to someone yesterday. We were talking about this time of the year, about people stealing and how many extra police are watching them. I'm like, and then my daughter, the very next day, not even 24 hours, I get this call.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I understand. I understand. So, Kelly, my heart goes to you. I've got to get going. I've got to get one more call here.
Okay, all right.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. One more call. It's great. I mean, you see, now, when I say confusion, can you feel empathy with the confusion of Kelly? Not telling him what to do. Yet, see, this is the problem we have. When we lack empathy, we advise. And advice is not the answer. But just embracing is the answer. Letting a person know, I get what you feel. One more call, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, it is me. You know, one of the things that I find myself always wanting to say to you is I don't understand why you're so biodeterministic about all of this. You know, why you feel that everything seems to have this sort of physical causality to it. Especially when you're talking about something like empathy. You know?
Yeah, you know, I know.
I mean, I'm a lot like that woman who called in, only more so. I mean, I'll pick up on things just by being in proximity to a person without even having to interact with them.
What's your name, by the way?
My name is Jackson.
Hey, Jackson, you know, I think you're right. My biodeterminism comes from my need on some level to understand. My belief in biodeterminism and that kind of stuff and just is recent. It's relatively new because I'm fascinated by the recent research because it just gets added to it all. Yes, many people would just say, why don't we just let love be love? Why don't we let things be alone, you know, and not try to understand them so clinically? I fully agree. But there's something about the clinical understanding that makes me understand even better. Like, I never really understood pornography until I thought of mirror neurons.
The fact that there's a correlation between emotional and physical, all right, does not even imply causality.
Yep.
It
does imply causality.
You can just as easily change a person's chemistry by changing their emotional state as you can change their emotional state by changing their chemistry. It's just as easy either way.
Well, this is a long discussion, you know, and I think what I would love to do is have you as a guest on my program to talk about it at some length, you know, would you call my office and leave them your phone number, and then we'll do a program specifically around that, then I will call you and I will ask you for your observations, because I think you have a lot to say about it as well.
I actually do.
Would you do that? Good. Call my office, 212-757-4488. Leave your name and phone number, and I'm going to call you, and we're going to put in a design around this, and I want to have you as my lead guest.
Wow.
Okay? Would you do that with me?
Okay.
Okay. I appreciate that much. Thanks, Jackson. And if you used another name, it's okay, too. Whatever you want to, however it is. Thanks for being here. I have to get going now, and I want to thank my engineers, and I want to thank people at WBAI. I will not be back live until Wednesday of next week. I won't be here on Christmas Day. I'm working on a project, so they will be playing music during my time slot, I've been promised. I will be with you on New Year's Day, and that's a wonderful thing. So on my way out the door, let me play you something. How about a little lively Mozart? And if you want to get if you want to see this website, it's ThePositiveMind.com. www.thepositivemind.com. You can send me an email through that as well. Nice to be with you, my friends. I'll be back with you next Wednesday. Thank you.